Everybody Hates Cleveland, the podcast. It's Mike Cattery again, hosting with Gage Will on the line. We're kicking off our positional preview series with the catching position, perhaps the most disappointing in 2020, but for defense. There are a couple of really interesting topics that I think are worth talking about, which is the level of expenditure this organization has retained in the catcher position despite its limited budget. And another key piece is, like, will the offense be that bad again? So I'm going to frame this a little bit, and then I'm going to let Gage tell you why it can't possibly be this bad again, I hope. So last year, they were 30th in baseball, weighted runs created plus, with a WRC plus of 29. To put WRC plus in context, 100 is basically league average, and it's a statistic that's created to measure a player's ability to impact run scoring. So if 100 is average, usually for the catching position, the league average would be a little lower than 100. So ideally a catcher would be, you know, 95, but 100 is average for all hitters. So they were, they had a WRC plus of 29, which means they were 71% below league average last year offensively in the catching position. Perez himself ran a stout 36, and his backup will be Austin Hedges, a notoriously abysmal offensive player. Is it getting better?
We say notoriously abysmal. Like Hattery said, they ran a 29 in 2020. Obviously, shortened season, all those caveats in tow. It cannot possibly get that bad again. Even your most harsh projections of them have the catcher positions putting out a 70 weighted runs created plus output, which is bad, but not a monstrosity like that one was. It cannot get worse. And I would bet everything I own. Don't tell my wife. I'll put a second mortgage on my house that the Indians weighted runs created plus from the catcher position will be higher than 29 in 2021. Too much 2020. It can't be worse,
y'all,
Mike.
You can't unfortunately see Gage looking over his shoulder, like looking to see if his wife was around. See if he could mortgage his house. He's really looking over his left shoulder. It's not great.
Hey, I'm good. In the okay. Basement. She's upstairs.
So let's talk a little about. You got to check your peripherals. I get it, my man. I think Gage has more to say. Let's go.
Listen, my house is not ventilated. Sound travels through my house. She can hear me. She's right above me.
So, okay, they're going to be better offensively. Now, you know what? Let me push back on that for a second. Like, yes, it is statistically unsustainable to be as atrocious as they were offensively last year from that position. But, like, we have a 33-year-old Perez. I'm thrilled he's back in camp 25 pounds later. I'm not actually sure that means anything other than he's a little more handsome for the Midwest. So I guess my big question would be, like, if we have a 33-year-old Perez who, like, really has had major health issues his entire career. Like, if his career is defined by anything, it's like consistently playing hurt and it affecting his offense. What's a reasonable expectation for him next year?
The Indians are banking on him hitting 15 homers and drawing walks 10% of the time, right? That's the whole math that goes into playing that glove first catcher like Perez. You draw walks 8 to 10% of the time, run into 15 homers, and all of a sudden you can't be worse than a 65 weighted runs created plus.
That's fair. Okay. Let's talk about the expenditure. So between Hedges and his ARB figure, or what they settled for before arbitration, Perez's option, you're spending roughly $9 million on the catcher position. You're spending approximately, depending on who you talk to and how you measure, approximately $55 million on the roster overall. You can argue to some extent 45. You can argue to some extent 60. Let's say 50 to 55 million. You're spending 10 million of that, 9 million of that on catcher. So you're spending approximately 15 to 20% of your budget on catcher. And while they're good defenders, you're spending 15 to 20% on your budget on catchers who can't hit. Why are we okay with that? Why are we cool with that?
I want to say that I've become more okay with it over time, especially with the additions of Eddie Rosario and Cesar Hernandez, two guys that are competent bats. But here's the other thing. It's not like it's just money that you can shift around however you want. If nobody's going to give you anything worthwhile for Roberto Perez, why dent yourself at that position? Who knows what the trade market value would have been for Roberto Perez? Additionally, you can't just swap out a few million for Austin Hedges for some other free agent because, I mean, I guess you could, but what is $3 million going to get you?
I mean, like, you know, this is an off season where didn't Hernandez is like a 2-year deal with the first year is it a $5 or $7 million option? I mean, he's like legit starting position player.
Yeah, and Marwin Gonzalez only got a few million, so maybe you could have added him to your bench with that. But I would say that if you're going to lean into the pitching approach, then you might as well just say, screw it. Let's just go with these guys that frame and block right now. And because Perez, as you said, is injury prone, and that framing and that catching skill gives you a baseline of competence, at least output from the position.
So I like that a lot. And I think I ultimately agree with Gage. Like I might have messed around to see if I could non-tender Hedges, buy cheap framing for $1 million or something, maybe done another lotto ticket reliever or something. You know, I probably would have liked to have seen them play that game, but I'm not super passionate about it. And I think the argument is a really strong one, which is, look, like it relates to my Prez argument. How much is he really going to play? The guy really struggles to play more than 90 games. Ultimately, that's just reality. Hedges is an elite defender too. He's an elite framer. They're both plus framers. And this team's built on pitching, and it's built on specific types of pitching. And I think Bieber, Savali, Plesac, McKenzie, all of them, and even Quantrill are very heavily reliant on commanding pitches to different parts of the zone. So both a game caller and a strong game caller is essential. And pitch framing is a huge deal. I think it adds more value to this rotation and group of pitchers than it adds to most pitchers, right?
Yeah.
When you have elite framing and, you know, plus command guys, it can really be a cumulative effect that builds value together.
Yeah. And I mean, as you said, I posted this on Twitter like a week ago or so, but the only staff in Major League Baseball to not throw a 98 mile per hour pitch last year was the Indians. And that's going to, obviously, Emmanuel Clase and Karinchak can hit that. Maybe Hentges if he gets in a bullpen situation, but they're not going to blow anybody away consistently. And as you said, Perez is going to max out at, even if he is perfectly healthy all year, that's what, 110 games? So then you got 50 games going to Hedges, which is 450 innings with that staff that you want Hedges to catch in an ideal world. So yeah, let's try to grab these Bieber and Quantrill and Plesac, two seamers that dart over the corner, and let's see if we can maybe buy a little bit more value. And the other side of that coin, too, is it's not a highly replaceable position. You said throw $1 million at somebody who frames well. You're still flirting with your margins there because there's a reason that guy who allegedly frames well is available for $1 million rather than Hedges $3 million.
Is Jose Molina still alive and well? What's he doing?
I mean, I think all the Molinas are somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a pretty unexciting position to discuss because, you know, Gage and I can say, hey, the offense is going to bounce back, and it will. It's going to be better. Is it going to be top 15 offense at the catcher position? Probably not. Still probably going to be 20th to 28th in the league. You could convince me of any end of that. But ultimately, the margins by which it will be bad will be much narrower. And it's where we'll see some of the largest offensive gains this season. I think, you know, it's really pretty reasonable to expect 70 WRC plus, which is like, hey, we just grabbed a 40% improvement in the position offensively year over year. That's a big deal to an offense that was really bad. Just being reasonably bad is a lot better than being horrific, and that will be helpful for them.
Yeah, and I'm not as much of a hater on Hedges' offense as most. Obviously, he's not good, but he might be able to run into a dinger here and there. And I don't know, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement, but it's hard. It's really hard to project catcher offense for a guy that played at every other day if he was lucky for his whole career. So maybe having a defined role can get a little bit more out of him offensively than what you might expect.
All right. So beyond those two, they're obviously going to break with those two. They're both healthy at the end of camp. I don't think they'll break with three catchers. The non-roster folks at catcher are pretty boring. It's Ryan LaVarnway, I believe, Gavin Collins. Collins is a quasi-prospect, more of a first baseman than a catcher. Offense is pretty fringy. There's not a lot right there. Now, the question, like the organizational depth and strength gets really interesting because we have the Naylor brothers, and in this instance, we have Bo. He's, you know, very early 20s, at 19 years old in A-ball. He was an above average offensive player while continuing to learn the catcher position, which is a pretty awesome indicator. Solid contact. And also, I think it was relevant that they had him at the alternate site. I think that's a big deal that we should put a lot of stock into, which is they're very invested in his development. Now, the counterpoint is developing catchers can take a really long time, especially, you know, when you take a prep catcher. This isn't like Rutschman, who's like a refined game caller and you're really just seasoning his bat for a year. This can take a lot of time, but we have a guy who played really well above his age level when he was 19/20. He spent last year at the alternate site, which was a huge confidence interval assertion by the organization. Like, how optimistic are we about Bo Naylor? And what's the timeline? Is it 2023? Is it 2022? Is it 2025?
First, I want to say we don't know anything about 2020. We have no idea what the teams obviously have some data on what happened in those alternate site camps that they're sharing, that most teams are sharing with one another. But I found it really compelling that every prospect Raider you could imagine, you got Keith Law, you got Eric Longenhagen over at Fangraphs and Baseball America, they're all higher on Bo Naylor all of a sudden. I don't think that's an accident. I think there's some real messaging coming out of that alternate site work that, hey, maybe this guy is closer and better bet than we thought. Like I said, they're not massive jumps, but they're all a little bit higher on Naylor all of a sudden. And as Hattery said, he played 19, 20 years old in A-ball and then skipped last year. The timeline will be really telling when we see where he starts 2021.
And it is worth noting that for a guy who hasn't yet turned 21, being assigned to high A would be a huge deal for a prep catcher who played basically one season. Like, that would be an aggressive assignment. So when Gage and I talk about, you know, where he's assigned and aggressive assignments, A plus would be a pretty aggressive assignment. Like, usually he would go spend a lot more time in Lake County, which would be A ball, and then he'd end up in A plus. Obviously that whole system is getting reshuffled with how the minors are changing, and we'll see how that goes. But traditionally A plus would be an aggressive assignment, and you'd say, hey, you know, ideally he spends the last month and a half in Akron, getting comfortable there and starting next year. So I think it's just, I'm tremendously excited about him. I think as Gage and I discussed, like, having a catcher who could just be average offensively is a huge deal for your lineup, right? It's a huge purchase because so many teams are going to trot out significantly below average catchers offensively. And so gaining that makes it really easy to build a good lineup.
And you see how much good hitting catchers cost every year in free agency. You got Yasmani Grandal last year, and then
Real Muto getting them checks.
I mean, that's part of the other reason you got the Cleveland baseball team going with two elite defensive guys is because they know they can't hang in the offense. If you're trying to buy offense at the catcher position, they're just not built that way. No matter how much money you want to put in the Dolan's pockets or you think the team puts in the Dolan's pockets, the only teams that can hang on buying free agent catchers that can hit are your Dodgers and your Red Sox and your Phillies and that top third tier. But yeah, it's really encouraging. I wouldn't put it past Bo Naylor to be spend a lot of time in Akron this year. That's what I would say.
And I think that's really the best case. That's like a very, that's a great scenario. I think it's very possible. I think you don't see guys that advanced, that young, usually really struggle until at least double A. So, I mean, I think there's a really strong chance he gets some cup of coffee there. And if it's a long one, that's a great sign. That's an absolutely great sign. There's not a ton of other minor league depth. The only other name I would mention would be Brian Lavastida. Obviously, like, I'll be fair. I haven't seen him play. I've only scouted the stat line. I've only read what people who I respect have had to say about him. I think he's really interesting. He's once again just like, he's another up-the-middle guy this organization is invested in who makes a lot of contact for his age and level. And that's a lot like Naylor, and it's a lot like we can discuss any of these up-the-middle guys. We can discuss Tyler Freeman, Owen Miller, Brian Rocchio. I mean, he's an up-the-middle defender.
Can I get a Jose Fermin plug?
Contact and doesn't scout. What?
Can I get a Jose Fermin plug?
Jose Fermin. So, like, I was a big Fermin shareholder because I'm like, they think he can defend well. And, like, he's one of the few people that, like, people are like, he makes a ton of contact, but we literally never see it being possible for him to add power to his frame. And I don't really understand how you can project that with such certainty. I don't think that's a reasonable assertion.
I mean, go back to Lindor when he was in the minors. Like, who was really projecting a bunch of added power to his frame?
He had that Aflac home run derby win when he was a high school kid. So everybody's like, it could be in there. He just, like, had to make adjustments. And he never, like, Lindor, there's a bunch of weight room comments today. He never got super big. Like, it's not like he's strong, he's muscular, but he never got, it's not like his body fundamentally transformed in a dramatic fashion.
Yeah, so talking about Brian Lavastida, I want to hit, it's just bizarre to me that you got a guy that scouts graded a 55-60 potential raw power tool that is only striking out 11% of the time in low A.
And young too. So, like, even more context, that low A season Gage is talking about, we're once again talking about like a 19/20-year-old in low A. Like,
yeah,
that's really solid age and level. A lot of times those guys are still in Arizona, like getting comfortable, feeling it out, learning how to catch. So that's big.
Yeah, he's a fringy, interesting type. Obviously, he's got some evaluators' attention, but really, if you want to talk about the next few years, you're just banking on Bo. I almost said Noah. I forgot his name was Noah. Bo Naylor is 2023, 2024. Which one would you bet on?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're really hoping for – I think a great outcome is – maybe a cup of coffee him in late 2022, but like the only time you expect him to play more than 50 games, ideally in 2023, right?
Yeah, I feel like catcher's a hard one for the cup of coffee thing too.
Yeah, and it also depends like how much you, like, I think if Perez was still in Cleveland, and I think that's why he's going to spend a lot of time in camp with the big league club this spring, and why he was an alternate site guy last year. I think they really want to invest in those guys having time with Perez and Hedges, who are top of the game pitch callers, framers, throwers. You know, everything about Roberto Perez, they want catchers to be around him.
Yeah, and I mean, with the unknown of, to be honest, is Bo Naylor, is he considered a good framer? I mean, it's hard to tell at that level at all. Have you read anything on that?
Yeah, I think people think he can be average. And I also think one of the real questions we want to ask is, you know, like, how much longer is framing going to be a market edge, right? Like, I think there's real likelihood that balls and strikes are called by robot umpire by 2024 or 2025.
Yeah, that's fair.
We have an upcoming collective bargaining agreement where I'm sure that'll at least be a heavily discussed topic. And so, I mean, that will if that changes, that would radically change the catcher position, right? Carlos Santana, the guys would be catching all the time. You just have to be an average blocker and an average thrower, or a below average thrower.
Yep. So they're dealing with maybe that's their big interest in Naylor down the road. Maybe they have some more intel there that they don't have to develop him as much there, but obviously you can't bank on that. Who knows what happens with the CBA and how everything plays out over the next few years. I do think it's just going to be really important to watch where Naylor ends up in April and maybe scour the coaching assignments to see what kind of coaches he's going to be working with down there. Cause I'm not sure where they had Luke Carlin. Is he still just a kind of in an organizational role still?
Yeah, he's bounced back and forth, I think, between Lake County and Mahoning. And I mean, he's definitely trusted with these guys. I think sometimes you'll see a manager bounce around a little bit and they're really trying to move him with a specific catcher. The organization also, Carlin helped run in the past the catcher development program with Sandy Alomar a couple of different times. Dave Wallace, back when he was doing a lot of coaching, did as well. I think one positive thing is a lot of people internally are really high on, you know, Sandy's kind of come up with like an individual grading metric that they use that's a little different than what we might think externally for catchers. They go over it after every game in Cleveland at the big league level. They try and reinforce that at the minor league level. So I think the organization is pretty invested in its competence in sort of developing catcher defense.
And I mean, yeah, you can't hate on the results of what's happened with Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez after that.
And they gave up on Francisco Mejia behind the plate, which I think some other teams probably should have done a little more quickly.
Yeah, they really played that one perfectly with kind of how they milked his value and dealt him at the right possible time, maybe a couple months late at the worst, right?
Yeah, no, I think they really hit that market perfectly. Anyway, well, this has been a pretty blah position. We don't have anything to argue about. Do you have any more takes before we cut this off and call it a catcher night?
My take is that we're discussing why Roberto Perez's fielding metrics have gone downhill in July for whatever reason. I mean, he's 30. How old is he? 33, 32?
Yeah.
He lost 25 pounds. I'm not going to sit here and say that catchers can't catch at a lighter weight. I was a catcher in high school. I wasn't overweight. I wasn't a good catcher either. But I really think we're entering that time where you just start to see skills depreciate. So you're going to need some more out of his bat, and then you're going to be having a weird conversation in the summer. That's my hot take.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable one. I don't like betting on 33-year-olds' bodies, especially 33-year-olds who have spent the last, like, 5 years dealing with different injuries all season. I just don't. It's not a gamble I would like to make. I hope it doesn't happen. I love Rob. I'm glad he's taking a little more care of the belly, in that respect. But, you know, I think that's a pretty reasonable take and definitely one we'll want to monitor throughout the season. So with all that said, this is the end of the catcher position preview. Thanks for being on with me, as always, Gage. And we'll be back shortly.